You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, April 16th, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world, and it's got to be almost 420 on the calendar. Oh my God, 420 weekend is coming, and considering we didn't get a 420 on 2020 when April 20th was 420 for the whole month, and we lost it because of the damn coronavirus, it almost felt personal. I got to be honest, it almost felt personal when it happened. You know, Corona really kicked in March 2020, and it just like, when it first was trickling in, the first, like in December and in January, when they were first starting to talk about it, I was listening, I was like, damn it, this virus thing better not mess with 420. And it did. It took 420 from us. Well, folks, not this time. We're doing 420 this year. And we're doing it in America's last absolute prohibition state. Join me for a 420 rally. I'll have the live stream going on my Radical Russ Facebook page. Live streaming from the Idaho State Capitol, one of the last places in America on 420 where you can still be busted for 420. So we won't be doing a lot of smoking, but we will fill you in on what's been happening in the state of Idaho, what's going on with our medical marijuana initiative. You'll be able to come down and sign the petition if you're in town, and we also might have something else for you. We'll see. And lots of speakers, lots of people to meet. Bring signs. We'll have signs. We also have a documentary film crew going to be there. So hope you'll join us. Also coming up first Saturday in May, all over the world, the Global Cannabis March. That's how I got my start, folks. Global Cannabis March 2005 in Portland, Oregon, was the first time I met anyone in the normal organization. And from there, everything just took off. So if you've been wanting to get involved in reforming cannabis laws in Idaho, come to the Global Cannabis March, get involved, meet people. If you show up, you're doing more than 99% of the people out there. All right, for today's show, we got a lot to cover. Great day in the state of Idaho just a day or two ago with the defeat of HJR 4, the Constitutional Drug Prohibition Amendment. We'll talk a little bit about that. We've also got a new poll out from Quinnipiac, which has broken new ground for marijuana legalization in the United States of America. We've also going to do a little remembrance. It's sad this week, at the beginning of the week, when we learned of the passing of Steve Fox from the Marijuana Policy Project, from Safer Alternatives for Enjoyable Recreation, from YS Strategies, the lead drafter of Colorado's Amendment 64 to legalize marijuana. He passed away this week at the young age of 53. I'm only 53, so that kind of hit hard. So I have a recording of Steve from a panel he did at the 2017 Drug Policy Reform Conference, which I thought was pretty compelling because he challenged us to think of alcohol as a drug. And I know that sounds weird because we all do think alcohol is a drug, but do we as drug reformers? Have we been putting the effort into harm reducing alcohol that we do harm reduction of heroin, meth, MDMA, and so on? So a good panel. We'll play that for you in Behind the Headlines. And in the Radical Rant today, we're going to give you a little more data on what's happening in the state of Idaho with respect to marijuana legalization and people's stand on that. And in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, we're going to go into detail on this HJR4 that just failed. We've got testimony from various Idaho legislators, some Republicans who were against this thing and helped to sink it. So that's good stuff. And I'll tell you about this proposal called Greater Idaho. I don't know if you heard about this. It's a proposal to take the red counties out of Oregon and move them into the state of Idaho. And of course, if they did that, marijuana would suddenly be illegal in a lot of places. We'll get to all that, but first, let's start off with the headline news.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/radicalruss. With your cannabis headline news for the week ending Friday, April 16th, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. The governor of New Mexico on Monday signed a bill to legalize marijuana in the state, as well as a separate measure to expunge records for people with prior low-level cannabis convictions. Starting on June 29th, adults 21 and older can purchase and possess up to 2 ounces of cannabis, 16 grams of cannabis concentrates, and 800 milligrams of infused edibles. Home cultivation of up to 6 mature cannabis plants will be allowed for personal use, with households limited to 12 total plants. Legal retail sales won't begin for another year or so, with a target date of April 1, 2022 or earlier. Cannabis purchases will include a 12% excise tax on top of the state's regular 8% sales tax. Beginning in 2025, the excise rate would climb by 1% each year until it reached 18% in 2030. Medical marijuana products, available only to patients and caretakers, would be exempt from the tax. National support for marijuana legalization has hit a high point, according to a new poll, with 69% of Americans now saying they favor ending prohibition. That includes a strong majority of Republicans, 62%, too. In fact, there's majority support among every demographic that was included in the survey, including those 65 and older at 51%. Quinnipiac University, which conducted the new poll, has consistently surveyed where Americans stand on the issue since 2012, and this is the highest level of support yet. It comes at a time when numerous state legislators are either approving or considering proposals to legalize, and as top congressional lawmakers are in the process of introducing bills to legalize federally. The new figure is 18 percentage points higher than when respondents were first asked about their views on the reform 9 years ago. A breakout also found that 70% of registered voters back legalization, compared to just 24% who are opposed. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says a bill to federally legalize marijuana that he's planning to introduce will be brought to the floor of his chamber soon.
I am going to put this bill on the floor as soon. It hasn't been introduced yet. I'm working with Senators Booker and Wyden, and once it is introduced, it will go on the floor. Before I came out for legalization, I studied it carefully. There were all kinds of parade of horribles, if you will. In states, they said drug use will go way up, crime will go up, mental illness will go way up. None of that happened in the states that legalized.
A bipartisan coalition of congressional lawmakers on Thursday reintroduced legislation that would federally legalize medical marijuana for military veterans. The Veterans Medical Safe Harbor Act would temporarily allow veterans to legally possess and use cannabis under federal law, as recommended by doctors in accordance with state law. Physicians with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs would also be allowed for the first time to issue such recommendations. Further, it would require VA to study the therapeutic potential of marijuana for pain and reducing opioid misuse. Currently, VA allows its physicians to talk about cannabis use with veterans, but they're prohibited from issuing recommendations that would allow them to obtain marijuana from state legal markets. A bill to allow on-site marijuana consumption lounges advanced through a Nevada Assembly committee on Friday. The panel separately passed a measure making it so the concentration of THC in a person's blood cannot be singularly used to determine impairment while driving. The social use legislation, sponsored by Speaker Pro Tem Steve Yeager, would create 2 new licensing categories for cannabis businesses in the state. One would be for retail cannabis consumption lounges, and the other would be an independent cannabis consumption lounge. Under the impaired driving bill that separately cleared the committee on Friday, the per se blood test for THC would no longer be used in determining impairment. Advocates have argued that the limit is arbitrary and there's a lack of scientific evidence demonstrating a link between the amount of THC metabolites present in the blood and active impairment. A bill to legalize marijuana in Minnesota is going through a thorough vetting process, with a 6th House committee on Wednesday giving the reform proposal a green light following a hearing. House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler, Speaker Melissa Hortman, and other lawmakers filed the measure in February. It would allow adults 21 and older to purchase and possess up to 1.5 ounces of cannabis and cultivate up to 8 plants, 4 of which could be mature. Days after a separate panel approved the legislation with amendments, the House Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee passed it in a 9-7 vote. Its next stop is the State Government Finance and Elections Committee. Winkler recently said that he expects the legislation to go through any remaining panels by the end of April, with a floor vote anticipated in May. Another Alabama House committee has approved a Senate-passed bill to legalize medical marijuana in the state, sending it to the floor. About 1 week after a separate panel amended and cleared the legislation, the House Health Committee on Thursday voted to advance the proposal in a voice vote. The panel first discussed the measure on Wednesday and made a series of amendments. Sponsored by Senator Tim Melson, the bill would allow people with qualifying conditions to access cannabis for therapeutic purposes. The full Senate approved the bill last month. Melson is the same lawmaker who sponsored similar legislation that was approved by the full Senate last year, but which later died without any House votes amid the coronavirus pandemic. The latest proposal would establish an Alabama Medical Cannabis Commission to implement regulations and oversee licensing. A bill to legalize possession of marijuana for some patients with certain medical conditions is going to the Senate floor in Tennessee following committee approval. The first bill, sponsored by Senator Becky Duncan Massey, would amend state statute to carve out a medical cannabis exception for people with written proof that they've been diagnosed with one of 11 conditions, such as cancer, epilepsy, multiple sclerosis, post-traumatic stress disorder, and HIV/AIDS. But there's a catch. Tennessee doesn't have any cannabis dispensaries where patients would be able to lawfully obtain the product. There seems to be something of a workaround, as the bill does stipulate that possessing marijuana or its derivatives would be legal if the person has proof they obtained it to treat a medical condition from a licensed medical marijuana dispensary in a jurisdiction where the sale of cannabis is legal. The cannabis product couldn't be intended for smoking or vaping, the amount of cannabis couldn't be more than a 30-day supply or contain more than 2,800 milligrams of THC, and it would have to be contained in its original packaging and labeled by the dispensary to indicate that it's for therapeutic use. A bill to decriminalize marijuana possession in Texas, as well as a separate proposal to reduce penalties for possessing cannabis concentrates, advanced out of a key House committee on Friday. These are the latest developments that have come after a week where Texas lawmakers have considered a medley of marijuana reform measures, but arguably the most significant piece of cannabis legislation to move out of committee would make possession of up to an ounce of marijuana a Class C misdemeanor that carries a fine but no threat of jail time. The full House of Representatives approved a cannabis decriminalization bill in 2019, but it did not advance in the Senate that session. The advancing legislation, HB 441, sponsored by Representative Irwin Zwiener, would also prevent the loss of a driver's license or the creation of a criminal record for possession of up to 1 ounce. Separately, the committee advanced legislation to make possession of up to 2 ounces of cannabis concentrates a Class B misdemeanor. Illinois took in more tax dollars for marijuana than alcohol for the first time last quarter, according to the State Department of Revenue. From January to March, Illinois generated about $86.5 million in adult-use marijuana tax revenue, compared to $72.3 million from liquor sales. Those following the cannabis market in Illinois might not be entirely surprised, as the state has consistently been reporting record-breaking sales, even amid the pandemic. In March alone, adults spent $109.1 million on recreational cannabis products, the largest single month of sales since retailers opened shop. If the trend keeps up, Illinois could see more than $1 billion in adult-use marijuana sales in 2021. Last year, the state sold about $670 million in cannabis and took in $205.4 million in tax revenue. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, whose proposed state budget includes provision to legalize both medical and adult-use marijuana, says he's sick of seeing tax revenue from cannabis sales go to neighboring states that have already legalized. Quote, "Frankly, I'm kind of tired of talking to the governor from Illinois," he said in a video posted to Twitter on Wednesday. "Whenever I get with him, he thanks me for having Wisconsinites cross the border to buy marijuana," end quote. Later in the day, Evers held a virtual town hall-style meeting where he and other members of the administration explained the legalization proposals and other elements of the budget plan, took public comments, and urged constituents to pressure the Republican-controlled legislature to stop blocking cannabis reform. Evers noted that among voters, members of both parties support the policy change, even if that isn't being translated into legislative action by lawmakers in the state's GOP-led Senate and Assembly. As bills to legalize marijuana in Connecticut move through the legislature, a new poll finds that the reform has strong support among residents. The survey from Sacred Heart University, released on Tuesday, found that about 66% of people in the state favor legalizing cannabis for adult use, while 27% are opposed. If the policy change is enacted, 62% said those with prior marijuana convictions should have their records expunged.
Further, the poll asked about perceived harms of cannabis, and 77% said they felt the plant carried fewer effects or comparable effects as alcohol. About 72% drew the same contrast between marijuana and other drugs such as heroin, amphetamines, and prescription painkillers. 48% said they agree that allowing recreational cannabis would lead to a significant increase in impaired driving, while only 2 in 5 respondents said they agree that marijuana is a gateway to other drugs. The medical marijuana program Mississippi voters approved in November, set to begin in August, hangs in the balance with the state Supreme Court, which heard oral arguments about Initiative 65 on Wednesday. Chief Justice Michael Randolph indicated the 9-judge court would issue an opinion as quickly as possible and, quote, "I know many people are waiting on this," end quote. Madison Mayor Mary Hawkins Butler, who filed the Supreme Court challenge, argues that the ballot initiative language added to Section 273 Section 3 of the state constitution in 1992 requires proponents to gather signatures evenly from 5 Mississippi congressional districts, with no more than 1/5 or 20% coming from any single district to ensure geographic parity. But Mississippi has only had 4 congressional districts since the 2000 census. Butler argues it's a, quote, "mathematical certainty," end quote, that of the nearly 106,000 certified voter signatures collected from what are now 4 districts to put Initiative 65 on the ballot last year, signatures from at least one of the districts surpasses 20%. Rick Perry, in a rare return to policy debates in Austin, is teaming up with a Texas Democratic state lawmaker to push for psychedelic drug therapy for veterans struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder. The former Republican governor is throwing his support behind a bill by State Representative Alex Dominguez, Democrat of Brownsville, that calls for a clinical study of psilocybin, the active ingredient in magic mushrooms, to treat PTSD in veterans. Perry said he has, quote, "historically been a very anti-drug person," end quote, and still firmly opposes legalization for recreational uses. However, he said he has seen through his longtime advocacy for veterans how psychedelic drugs can provide relief to former service members who have exhausted other options and are traveling to other countries like Mexico to receive treatment. House Bill 1802 would direct the Health and Human Services Commission to conduct a clinical study of psilocybin in partnership with a health sciences university and a Veterans Affairs hospital. The proposal would also ask HHSC to do a literature review, a survey of prior studies, of using not just psilocybin, but also MDMA and ketamine to treat PTSD in veterans. A second California Senate committee has approved a bill to legalize possession of a wide range of psychedelics and create a working group to study broader reform. The legislation, sponsored by Senator Scott Wiener, advanced through the Health Committee on a 6-2 vote Wednesday. This comes 1 week after the Public Safety Committee approved the proposal. If enacted into law, the bill would remove criminal penalties for possessing or sharing numerous psychedelics, including psilocybin mushrooms, DMT, ibogaine, LSD, and MDMA, for adults 21 and older. The measure would also provide expungements for the prior convictions for offenses that it makes lawful. 15 people incarcerated on drug possession charges in Washington state will be released from prison following commutations issued this week by Governor Jay Inslee, nearly 2 months after the state Supreme Court struck down the state's felony law against simple possession of controlled substances. The governor's office announced the commutations on Tuesday, saying that 13 of the petitions had already been signed, and 2 more were expected to be finalized later in the day, with even more to come soon. Lawmakers, meanwhile, are working to pass legislation to respond to the court ruling, State v. Blake, before the legislative session ends later this month. Steve Fox, the man at the forefront of marijuana legalization in Colorado, has died at the age of 53. He started his lobbying career as one of the first political professionals to become a marijuana advocate and spent the rest of his professional life advocating for cannabis policy reform all over the country. When he joined the Marijuana Policy Project in 2002, Steve was the only full-time cannabis lobbyist on Capitol Hill. He would remain at the forefront of the cannabis policy reform movement for nearly 2 decades, playing pivotal roles in several major victories at the federal and state levels. Steve was a lead drafter of Colorado's historic Amendment 64, which legalized cannabis for adult use, and he managed all aspects of the successful campaign behind its passage and implementation. He also conceptualized and co-founded Safer Alternative for Enjoyable Recreation, or SAFER, which laid a lot of the groundwork for the legalization effort and contributed to a seismic shift in the U.S. cannabis policy debate. In 2009, he co-authored the book Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink?, which is based on the SAFER strategy. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, April 16th, 2021. I'm Russ Belville. Cannabis Headline News is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show Live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio. All right, coming up here in the next segment, we've got some drug war data mining, taking a look at the state of Idaho and marijuana. We got some more stats for you and polls from the national level. Quinnipiac's got a new poll on marijuana legalization to tell you about. But that sound means it's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone. That means it's time for our union-mandated safety briefing. So let's be careful out there.
Is coming up soon. But while tokers in most Western states are free to celebrate our cannabis holiday, tokers in Idaho will still go to jail. Join the Idaho Citizens Coalition this 4:20 on the steps of the Idaho Capitol to protest for our rights as cannabis consumers. Kind Idaho will be there with the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act. Come sign the petition and learn how to become a volunteer signature gatherer. Show your support by joining us online on 4:20 at 11 a.m. Mountain at facebook.com/IdahoCan.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Enough is enough. Let's try a new way. Let's try a new policy.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere.
Radical Russ here, reminding you that marijuana legalization doesn't just happen. Smart, dedicated activists have put their freedom and future on the line to make it happen. Like the activists at the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Since legalization at the state level began in 2012, the MCBA has been working to ensure that the implementation of legalization is inclusive of minorities and reparative of the damages done to communities of color by the war on drugs. Get involved by visiting minoritycannabis.org. And keep it here on Radical Russ Radio for conversations with leaders from this organization, the best marijuana music, and the latest news about cannabis.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Well, today in the data mines, we're taking a look at the Gem State, the state of Idaho, where I have found the data repository for the Idaho State Police. And what a treasure trove of data this is. And I actually got to give some kudos to Idaho because, you know, I look stuff up all over the nation, all over the world, and particularly in Oregon, I've had to look up data. And Idaho's is actually easier to use. Actually gives you better results than what I was getting in Oregon. So this is going to be fun attacking the marijuana laws in Idaho, given all this information. And what I wanted to find out was Idaho marijuana arrests. The state police list out drug crimes, and they've got a breakdown, alcohol and drug crimes. It's actually the official name of the report is the Alcohol and Drug Arrest Trends 2009 to 2018. And it breaks it down county by county from, you know, over a 10-year period of marijuana arrests. And what I found is that marijuana arrests in the state of Idaho from about 2009 on were around 4,200 a year, about 4,200 arrests. But once legalization took root in Oregon, from 2015 on, 15, 16, 17, and 18, have been increases in marijuana arrests ever since then, which, you know, duh. Of course there have been. People been crossing the border. When they come back, they got to go through that gauntlet of Idaho State Police who pull over whichever car that they can get a pretextual stop on and then try to get a marijuana bust out of it. So it's actually increased by about half. The most recent year, 6,032 arrests in 2018. Now, in Idaho, the police do have the option, the discretion, of giving you a summons rather than taking you straight to jail. They do have that option. It's still a misdemeanor. It's still a crime. You're still getting,
you know, but you may not have to get booked and taken in and fingerprinted and all that, but it differs county by county. And so I broke it down and I found in Ada County. Now, Ada County is Boise. It's the place with the most people in the state of Idaho. They had 1,494 marijuana arrests in 2018, the most recent year. Almost 1,500, you know, six short of 1,500 marijuana arrests. Their arrest rate was 55.5%, which was higher than the state average. The state average is 45%. So everywhere else in the state of Idaho, it's more likely you're not going to go to jail. You're just going to get a summons. But in Ada County, it's more likely you are going to go to jail. You're going to get booked and fingerprinted and mugshot. And if you can't bail out, you're going to get cavity searched and given the little flip-flops and the fun little jumpsuit. The bologna sandwich the next day. So I looked up, out of 1,494 arrests, 829 went to jail last year in Ada County alone. And I broke down all the counties to find out which were worse and which were better. It's a little unfair on a couple of them, like Butte County, Camas County, Oneida County. They only had one marijuana arrest. There were a couple that had zero. There were no marijuana arrests in Lemhi or Custer County, which is believable because that's all remote wilderness part of Idaho. So I didn't care, you know, the percentages of these counties where they only had one or two marijuana arrests. That's too low a count to really say which is the worst county. But there were a couple that tied at, oh, no, I'm sorry. Let me make sure I'm looking at the right numbers here. There was one county where you better not get busted with weed in the state of Idaho, and that is Lincoln County. Lincoln County, Idaho, had 23. Now, Lincoln County is north of Twin Falls, isn't it? I don't remember what the city is. Is Shoshone in Lincoln County? I think it is. The county seat there. 100%. 23 marijuana arrests, 23 people went to jail. Guaranteed you're going to jail if they catch you in Lincoln County. Now, other places had much lower rates. Valley County, Mike McCall, 31%, almost 32%. 44 arrests, only 14 went to jail. And I think that was the lowest one. Adams County was 32%. Oh, I'm sorry. I should have sorted this before I came into work, right? No, I do find the lowest one, Clark County, which is kind of another remote county in the northeastern corner of the bottom part of the state. Clark County had 21 marijuana arrests. Only two were taken to jail. So this chart's available up on the idahocan.co site. You can find that. But it also comes with some information that was very interesting. And that is the Idaho Public Policy Survey. Now, this comes from Boise State University's School of Public Service. And it wasn't asking a marijuana question directly. It was asking about the funding of our state prison system. And they asked, when they asked this question, should we spend more money on our prison system so that first-time offenders, criminal offenders, can be kept away from the public longer? Only 10.1% of the people agreed with that, that we ought to spend more money on prisons for first-time offenders. By contrast, 81.9% agreed the state should spend more money on finding effective education and treatment programs so that first-time criminals leave prison and don't commit new crimes. So one easy way we could do this, of course, is to stop the criminalization of marijuana smokers in Idaho. And if that's too far, then let's decriminalize in the state of Idaho. Just decriminalize it. Just make it so it's not an arrestable offense. It's a ticket that someone has to pay. If we're really serious about criminal justice reform and legalization's too far for the state of Idaho, let's think about that. Because the rest of the nation is moving on without us. There is no American majority anymore that supports marijuana prohibition. This is the latest news that we get from the latest survey on marijuana legalization. And I've been tracking every poll that has ever asked, should marijuana be legal, since 1969. I got hundreds of these polls, and they just keep going up.
The last one from Gallup poll was 68%. This one from the Quinnipiac University pollsters, who are very well respected, 69% support for marijuana legalization, only 25% opposed. You can only find one out of four people in America as a whole that want to keep marijuana prohibition. And when you break down the demographics, there's no majority support anymore for marijuana prohibition. Every demographic supports legalization. Used to be people over 65. That was the last holdout. You'd look at all the age breakouts, and of course, young people really want it legal, but 65 and over, all the last holdouts? No, they're at 51% now, 42% opposed. And that 42% opposed among the people over 65, that's the best that the opposition's got. Kevin Sabet might as well go on the Decades channel and the Lawrence Welk show and start selling, you know, on Fox News to the old folks, because that's the only audience he's got anymore for prohibition. Republicans supported at 62%. 62% among Republicans, 67% for independents. Every demographic, college educated, not college educated, black, white, Hispanic, all supporting legalization, 70% or higher. And the best number of all that, the best number in the whole poll, support for legalization among voters, registered voters, is at 70%. 7 out of 10 Americans now support legalization. Idaho, how can you be so far behind the times? Well, I mean, that's actually the state motto, right? Esto perpetua, always behind the times. I think my Latin's a little rusty. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Steve Fox, who passed away this week at the age of 53, one of the pioneers of marijuana legalization. Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. Radical Russ here, inviting you to join me live every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain for Toker Talk Radio. It's talk radio by, for, and about the cannabis community. You can add your voice to the mix as well by calling my hotline at 833-RAD-RUSS and leaving me a voice message. It's Toker Talk Radio live at 5 p.m. and available as podcast only to my VIPs at patreon.com/radicalruss.
And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
If fruity flavors and bright colors on marijuana edibles are marketing to the kids, how come they still allow wine coolers and fruity vodkas? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
You're listening to Radical Russ Radio, content for the cannabis community. The Coffee Pod in Sumter, Oregon is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with the selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Russ sent ya.
Welcome back, 34 after the hour, and in this segment where we're paying tribute to Steve Fox. I met Steve Fox a number of times at various marijuana events throughout Colorado and California and other places. You may have seen him on
Fox News or CNBC debating someone like a Kevin Sabat. Made numerous television appearances. In 2002, he was the first full-time lobbyist on Capitol Hill, worked for the Marijuana Policy Project. And from there, he went on in 2009 to co-author the book Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? With my former colleague Paul Armentano and Mason Tvert from Colorado. They also co-founded Safer Alternatives for Enjoyable Recreation, the Colorado Safer campaign that was basically the laid the groundwork for Amendment 64, the legalization campaign in 2012 that became the first to pass marijuana legalization in the United States. And Steve wrote that Amendment 64. So in many ways, he is the author of the first American marijuana legalization. So he passed away this week at the age of 53, which is how old I am. So it was kind of shocking to find that he was gone. And I went back through the archives to find a recording of Steve that I had done. And I remembered this distinctly because he always made you think, you know, even as a drug reformer, he didn't take the marijuana status quo, you know, for granted. He questioned even our ethics and morals and how we should be legalizing and what we really believed in. And as a part of that, he pointed out at a reform conference that, you know, if we're drug reformers and we're all about harm reduction, why aren't we harm reducing alcohol? Right? You know, we talk a lot about harm reduction for meth and coke and party drugs and heroin and what about alcohol? How come we as drug reformers, you know, we often in our debates say that, you know, treat marijuana like alcohol or it's safer than alcohol, but why aren't we doing something about alcohol? So I think this is the clip. And if not, it'll still be good because it's Steve Fox. Steve Fox and Dan Riffle, who was also with Marijuana Policy Project for many years, at the Reform Conference 2017... Drug Policy Reform Conference. I hope you enjoy it.
I'm going to turn now to Steve and Dan, and also, I guess, invite saying something on the topic that we've been on, but also broaden it out a little bit. So the second thing that I want to kind of bring to everyone is the idea about marketing, right? So the idea is if you're in a normal capitalist system and marijuana is just another product, then people who are selling it should be able to talk to their potential consumers and say, buy my version, it's better than the other person's version. Buy a lot of it. But there's a downside to that, or at least I think there is. That has been seen with tobacco and alcohol. Marijuana is not the same as those substances, but there's a way in which just unfettered marketing, especially marketing aiming at children, could, I think, do harm and for sure could generate a political backlash against the legalization that's happened so far. So still talking, and I'm going to start with you, Steve, still talking about sort of how the industry is developing in the United States. You've got a really unique perspective on that. What's being done, what do you think is going to be done to really promote diversity, racial and gender diversity, socioeconomic diversity, and who benefits from legalization, number one? And number two, where are we headed in terms of marketing restrictions and what all that happens? So that's a lot, and I hope we can do it concisely.
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to touch on a lot of that. Some of it's challenging in terms of trying to have the system set up to benefit those who have been disadvantaged in the past, although there are many states that have included provisions in their competitive licensing processes that allow for extra points for diversity. You know, these are generally a scoring system that a state sets up, and you've seen that in many states. I can't tell you how much it's tipped the scales. I haven't done that kind of analysis. But that at least is out there. Maryland had a provision like that. There's a controversy going on there because the Attorney General had a rule that you actually couldn't use race as a
a scoring measure to give certain groups additional points unless you prove that there's been discrimination in the past, which is ironic because there's been plenty of discrimination, but not discrimination in licensing because licensing is never done. So at least in Maryland, that all got messed up. So there are ways, like what California did, obviously I feel very strongly about not having past felonies be a barrier to ownership or certainly employment. One thing I would note briefly is that I think it's also important, this is something happening in California now, we certainly did it in Colorado, was to make sure, and this is relevant in Canada as well, especially in like British Columbia, that you make sure those who have been operating, whether it was a gray market or a medical market or whatever it was, but that they have the opportunity to move forward and be part of the bigger system. In Colorado, it very much started with underground dealers becoming caregivers, becoming storefront caregivers, becoming medical marijuana operators, becoming retail operators. I don't know how much you'll see that in the future. I mean, I think Oregon provides that opportunity. California provides that opportunity. So anyway, that's important that those people aren't left out. I mean, I think it would be unfair. British Columbia right now said we need to be an entirely government-run system, and those who have spent years operating the system were just left out and jobless and businessless. So in terms of marketing, just quickly on that, it's really reiterating what I said before in a way. Not saying in any way cannabis isn't potentially harmful in some ways. We could discuss the ways in which that may be the case, but it's inarguable that it's less harmful than alcohol. And that's really how it needs to be treated, which is, as I've said this before, which is we shouldn't be thinking in this marketing sense, we shouldn't be thinking that we're making cannabis legal and this is something new and we need to treat it entirely different. We should be thinking that it is a less harmful version of alcohol with all kinds of medical benefits and health benefits as well. But you have to think of it in that way. We have a terrible alcohol problem in this country, and cannabis is a less harmful alternative, and that is how it needs to be discussed and marketed.
Well, see, so but is your bottom line, the answer on marketing is whatever they do with alcohol is about right, or do you have something, I guess I want to push you to say something more substantive than that, which is, okay, so what should the rules be for alcohol and cannabis?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you'd be forcing me to figure out how there should be less alcohol advertising in order to answer that, because I very much feel that cannabis needs to be allowed to market cannabis the way you market alcohol. Alcohol cannot have a marketing advantage. There's
so another playing field. Should that playing field be one that is more restrictive than the current alcohol regime?
I wouldn't have a problem if it was more restricted. There's certainly alcohol on all the time. It's pervasive. It's throughout our society. We could go on. I could have a much longer discussion about alcohol use on college campuses and what that's doing, literally causing death and all kinds of other issues. And you don't have any college president saying we should let our students use cannabis instead of alcohol openly, even in states where it's not legal. You don't have college presidents saying those who are 21 and older should have as much opportunity to use cannabis as alcohol. It just hasn't happened.
So Dan is literally chomping his head.
Yes. Okay, we'll give Steve a moment here too. But, Dan, I really, both of those questions that I posed to Steve, it'd be great for you to address that. And I guess I'm really curious to sort of hear your vision of a essentially non-commercialized rule. And what does that mean for, well, the marketing part of it is going to be easy, but what does that mean in terms of sort of the reparations, which is a strong word?
No, that's exactly the word. So, I mean, I'm charming with that a little bit, but then you stole my thunder and said what I was going to say. So, Steve is absolutely right about a couple of things. First of all, we have a tremendous alcohol problem in this country. And one of the reasons that we have a tremendous alcohol problem in this country is that our alcohol laws are way, way, way too lax. He's also right that marijuana is much safer than alcohol. And when Steve says that rules around marijuana should be no more restrictive than they are for alcohol, in a vacuum, I agree with him. But we don't live in a vacuum. We live in a society with laws and rules for other things. And the fact of the matter is we set the bar way, way too low for alcohol. So when we think about how do we set the rules for marijuana, we should think about how do we set the rules for marijuana. We shouldn't say, how do we set the rules for marijuana vis-a-vis alcohol? Because then we're in a race to the bottom where we've got this bar that's way too low for alcohol. And now we're going to go in even further under that for marijuana. The fact of the matter is the bar for alcohol should be here. And the bar for marijuana should be much lower than that, here. But let's not do a race to the bottom where we try to take away all the laws, all the rules for both products. And on that topic, you know, I think it is a bit of a cop-out, and I want to challenge not just Steve, but everybody in the room, because we're all in the drug policy reform movement. And I've seen countless times people in the drug policy reform movement get upset when people in the media say drug problems and don't include alcohol in that conversation, or when they say drugs and alcohol because it makes alcohol seem like it's not a drug, when we all know that it is. But we in the drug policy reform movement don't include alcohol ourselves in our own work, in our own reform efforts. And I think everyone here in this room recognizes and understands that, at least in the United States and in other countries, although I don't have the international expertise of other folks on this panel, that we have a real problem with alcohol. It is, we say it in our work at NPP and in other organizations, and we mean it because it's right. It is a deadly drug. It is arguably the most harmful drug in our society. I mean, you know, heroin is more harmful in an acute sense, but to the extent that alcohol is more widely used, in large part because our laws are so lax, it is arguably the most harmful and deadly drug in our society, and that's because our laws are too lax, at least in part. And so, you know, it shouldn't be advertised on television. It shouldn't be on billboards in stadiums. And we had this realization with tobacco, where, you know, in the 70s, it was advertised on TV and it was on everything. We had cartoon characters on cigarette boxes and we thought, this is ridiculous. And we rolled that back, right? But for whatever reason, we haven't had that reckoning with alcohol. And I think it's incumbent on some of the people in this room to have that reckoning with alcohol. On the topic of, you know, reparations, which I think is the right word, you know, we've been at one extreme where black and brown and poor and young people are disproportionately more likely to be thrown in jail. I mean, there's a temptation to say, okay, now that we're legalizing it, let's make it so that black and brown and poor and young people are disproportionately more likely to get rich. And, you know, I understand that temptation. I think, again, for me, it's not about how do we make policy relative to where policy was, but just what is the right policy? And for me, you know, first and foremost, when I look at the list of reasons why I got involved in drug policy reform, or specifically marijuana policy reform, it is that adults should not be punished for using marijuana. It's just not that harmful. There are better things for law enforcement officers to do with their time. Let's focus on violent crime, real threats to public safety. When I was a prosecutor, I had rape and aggravated assault files that I was ignoring because I was upstairs in Muni Court cleaning out marijuana cases all day. Racially disparate enforcement of the laws. All of those are things that can be addressed and are addressed largely in D.C., where I'm from, where we have strict decriminalization, where we wipe the laws off the books, and marijuana is legal, but we don't necessarily have a large commercial industry. The thing that a large commercial industry does is it makes it easy for you to get marijuana if you want marijuana, and it makes it possible to get rich selling marijuana. And those are just not high on my priority list. The stuff that's high on my priority list is the stuff that I picked off earlier about making sure that the adults who want to use marijuana can do so and not be punished, and ending arrests and giving law enforcement officers better things to do with their time. To the extent that if we want to have that conversation and do those other things and make sure that people can buy marijuana and, you know, have a legal regulated means to have stores, it can be done in ways more responsible than through, you know, a free sale commercial industry. We heard the conversation from Spain, folks who were involved in the illicit market, who were dealers before, have stores. We saw some of that in Colorado in the early days. I would challenge the representation that, you know, Colorado was, that you had to be well capitalized the way that we have the law now in order to be compliant with the law. Most businesses in Colorado were compliant with the law all the way back to 2011-12. In the late medical marijuana days, there were some, obviously some bad examples, but you know, most businesses were compliant and are compliant today. But you know, you can have a government monopoly with a mandate that people who run stores, people who work in stores, you know, you can have a quota for hiring, you can have a point-based system, just like you have a licensing where you give preference to minority applicants. So that can be done that way as well. But anyway, for a second, but obviously.
One of those great panels from the Drug Policy Reform Conference.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, the sole producer of this 24-hour marijuana music and cannabis conversation stream I call Radical Russ Radio. As part of my mission to educate and entertain people about the need to end adult marijuana prohibition, I produce the Russ Belville Show podcast every week, available absolutely free wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who'd like to help support my mission financially, you can become a Radical Russ Radio VIP at patreon.com/radicalruss or by clicking the link for Toker Talk Radio in the main menu. For just $4.20 a month, VIPs will receive the exclusive download of Hour 2 of my podcast, Toker Talk Radio, every week, as well as the 5-minute cannabis headline news every weekday. Upgrade to the $14.20 a month tier, and you'll get those podcasts and a set of custom patriotic pro-marijuana stickers from me every quarter. And if you can afford to support Radical Russ Radio at $44.20 a month, you get my podcast, and each quarter you receive a poster, then a mug, then a t-shirt, and finally a hoodie that proclaim your support for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I literally cannot do this without you. Your support enables me to continue my life's work, and I thank you for it. Visit patreon.com/radicalruss and become a Radical Russ Radio VIP today.
And now, Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
If an employer has to test your urine to determine if you're using drugs at work, doesn't that suggest that they would never have known about it otherwise? This has been Puff Pass Ponder with Radical Russ.
Radical Russ here, reminding you that marijuana legalization doesn't just happen. Smart, dedicated activists have put their freedom and future on the line to make it happen. Like the activists at NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. NORML activists have helped to end the arrests of marijuana consumers since the first states decriminalized in the 1970s through the latest states to legalize this decade. Learn more about NORML at norml.org and get involved with your state or local chapter today. And keep it here on Radical Russ Radio for conversations with leaders from this organization, the best marijuana music, and the latest news about cannabis.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Well, 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 see Scott grow, ban my grow, oh hell no, go Scott, go, you're a schmo. We won on HJR4, the zombie reincarnation of SJR 101, which was the brainchild of C. Montgomery Grow, the senator from Eagle, and a member of the Quorum of 70, the general authority, whatever the hell it is, in the Mormon church. So he's getting his orders from on high, folks. To oppose marijuana legalization in any form, to stand up for the temperance and sobriety, the morality in the family, as determined by the Idaho Constitution, has died, has failed in his efforts to forever ban medical marijuana initiatives, any sort of drug initiative in the state of Idaho. And it's fantastic news. It was so, so fulfilling to be able to watch Idaho Republicans speak out against this bill and some of them to actually deliver some pretty good words about medical marijuana. In the next hour, we're going to play some of these representatives for you. Some of the Republicans that voted no. We needed 12 no votes. We got 16 no votes. And a few of them talked of surviving cancer or dealing with cancer in their family. Others talked about how they had relatives who were actually medical marijuana growers and people in their family that are growers and patients. Others who talked about CBD oil and people who are getting benefit from the result from epilepsy through the use of CBD oil. We had others that talked about the right to try law. So there is compassion in the Idaho House, at least, not as much in the Senate, it appears, but at least in the Idaho House, enough compassion to recognize that medical marijuana is something that the people of Idaho should be given the choice to decide. Representative, it was Ben Adams, I think he was, spoke of, and you got to understand, there in the Idaho legislature, there's some older legislators, but some of these newer guys are younger, and one of them is in real trouble. I was just catching the headlines on Von Ellinger out of Lewiston. Oh, catch up on that in another show. But this, they're all very clean cut. Most of them are military looking, I think had military background. And he brought up the medical marijuana issue. He brought up Idaho being a state that somebody had to leave. Somebody in the military he knew whose wife had a terrible condition and her organs were failing and all the drugs that they were giving her weren't working and it was killing her. And so the doctor said, look, you ought to try medical cannabis. She tries it. What do you know? Her organs stop failing. She gets better. But then he gets relocated to a state that doesn't have medical marijuana. And so she moves with him, has to go off the medical marijuana, and then gets worse and worse again because of the drugs she has to take. And then, you know, organs are failing again. And the doctor there says, whatever you do, go back to where you were or you're going to die. Go back to where you were so you can use medical cannabis. And so finally the husband gets a transfer so he can finally go back and be with her. And he closes his statement by saying, and I don't want Idaho to be the place where they can't go to, where there's no path for them to be here. So he implies that the state that this probably airman, because we have Mountain Home Air Force Base, the state that this airman had to leave because his wife would die if she had to stay in it, was Idaho. So there's some of them that get it. Now, they're still beholden to this idea that we got to find some way to take care of the cancer patients but still be able to bust all the stoners. That's the next hurdle to get them over is like, look, you don't need to bust the stoners. Like they feel that some terrible thing is going to befall their society if they don't keep busting the stoners. And I think what they think that is pot shops and tie-dyes and the smell of pot. Really, I think that's what they are fearful of is just having to see it. Like, I think they've got to know that marijuana exists in Idaho. The $10 million being sold in Ontario every month, they're not smoking in Ontario. They're bringing it back to Idaho. I think what they really believe is that if they can just keep it in the closet, if they can just keep it hidden, if we just don't have to see it, we can pretend it's not there. And that legalization opens their eyes to it and makes them recognize that it exists. Because once you recognize that it exists, then you have to recognize that people around you, people you know, somebody is using it. In fact, in the state of Idaho, some 14% of you are using it. 1 out of 7 are using it at least once a year. 200,000 Idahoans using it at least once a year. 113,000 using it at least once a month. It's about 9%. So it's happening. You're getting the marijuana smoke and you're just not getting any of the tax revenue from it. That's the problem. I mean, it's funny to me that Idaho just wants to, Idaho's willing to pay a tax to another state, to two other states, just to be able to pretend marijuana doesn't exist. That's remarkable to me. Well, that's all the time we got for hour one. Stay tuned for hour two coming up, Toker Talk Radio. I'm going to tell you about this Greater Idaho proposal, this crazy thing, and then we'll get into detail about the HJR 4 defeat. We got those Republicans, the recording of them. You'll hear some of them from the House chambers. For everyone here in America's last absolute prohibition state, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.